Wing Commander Murray, Reel 2.
Well, the next one was Operations Mine Laying. That's the 17th, the 24th. It was just operations. By then, you know, you were doing it fairly frequently, so...
This is April 40.
Oh, yes, and it was... yes. And this is May the 4th, 40, which was Operations Mine Laying Oslo. That's the incident I talked about. And says that we were hit and landed at Kinross. So you know that story. 11th of May, Operations Munchen-Gladbach. 15th Ruhr, 17th Hamburg, 19th Rhein, Rhein, R-H-E-I-N-E, wherever that is. 23rd, Salzburgen. 27th, Flushing Aerodrome. So it's fairly, you know, frequent at that time. June the 4th, Operations Oil Frankfurt. 6th, Oil Hamburg. North, 8th, North Amiens Crossroads. 10th, the railway at Lille. 12th, just operations. 13th, operations Faunier. This presumably would be when the, you know, Dunkirk was sort of on its way. 17th of June, Hanover. 19th, just operations. 23rd, Aircraft Works, Wismar. 26th, operations, 28th. 30th, operations, no details. July 13th, operations. 18th operations, that's not 25th operation. Oh, wait a minute, this is Dortmund-Ems operations. That was a series of operations. I think we did three, in which Babe Leroyd, who I mentioned, actually got the VC. And it was the Dortmund-Ems Canal. And our task was to drop mines on the aqueduct of the canal, which was over the river. And I think we did two or three, I think it was three. Babe dropped the mine, and my task was to fly along. We had balloon cutters in the wings of the Hamdens. And my task was to fly along one side of the canal so that I could slice the cables of any balloons which might be there to protect the target. And I did one or certainly one, I think two of those. And on the third operation, my task, there was a fighter aerodrome just adjacent, and I spent 2 hours dropping bombs every so often, just to keep them busy. Just like doing a practice bombing run on a bombing, target in England, and actually hit the station, you know, with each bomb, which I thought was rather pleasing, but it was a moonlight period. So there's those operations. Operations Lorient. That's dropping a mine. I don't know, you're not a sailor, so you don't know Lorient Harbour. It's got two sort of castle things at the, rather like the entrance to Portsmouth Harbour. We had to drop mines between the two. And that was I remember feeling very sorry for the French because they were firing at us on one side. We were very low, of course. And the Ehrlichans or whatever they were tracers. And they were bursting on the roofs of the wretched Frenchmen in the town on the other side, which I thought was somehow unfair.
What date was that?
I've got that down as the 22nd of August. Then the 25th power plant, Berlin. So we were aiming for specific targets there. 28th, just operations Berlin. A lot of these other operations would have been Berlin, I think. Because I know we did quite a lot of trips there. See, that the power plant Berlin took 8 hours 45 minutes.
Was Berlin heavily defended in the summer of 1940?
There was a lot of flak. And yes, it was pretty heavily defended.
Did fighters come up?
Yeah.
Did you have any narrow escapes from fighters?
No, I was quite lucky. I didn't have very much at all except a bit of peppering from the flak. But I was never found by a fighter. But these just go on, operations on the September 6th.
Which month is that? Is that still on?
You see, I was saying that August we were sent on target crew. I must have got that wrong, the timing wrong. Yeah. September operations. Then we went, bombed Antwerp on the 15th. So that was 6th, the 10th. The 15th, 19th operations, 22nd operations bombing barges Le Havre.
So it sounds as though you had taken off operations
at the end of September, it must have been. Yes, because then I'm flying Anson's. It doesn't say where I was for now. That would have been when I went to, yes. My last operation was September the 22nd, 1940, bombing the barges. So it would have been after that that we were sent on.
You say that morale was so high, but did you ever come across this?
There's a gap between the 22nd and the 28th. That's when I would have been on leave.
Did you ever come across this phenomenon of lack of moral fibre?
It was too early there. I can't remember, no one at that stage, I can recall.
Later on in the war?
I did have one. You see, this lack of moral fibre, I think when you got really tired, everyone's lack of moral fibre, you know. I should say I was jolly short of moral fibre when I was, say, taking off on my 6th trip and the chance of survival, you know, and you're tireder and tireder, you know, when you know it's just luck, really. And the odds against you surviving get longer and longer, and the tireder and tireder you get, so. You know, I have no contempt for people who have lack of. The only instant I recall, I remember I had to go on a court martial for someone who was being court martialed for refusing to face the enemy or something, which was adjourned on a technicality. But that was when I was in 207 Squadron.
Did you know him, wasn't he?
No, he was another unit, and we were the court martial. On a technicality, they postponed the thing, and fortunately, I was due to go on leave, so I managed to you know, escape any further. I did have, again, I think it was in 207 Squadron, I had a flight sergeant who refused, a New Zealander, who refused to fly, who refused to operate. And it's very difficult for a squadron commander to know what to do.
What can you do?
Exactly. I could court-martial him, but I had him off the station in within 24 hours.
Because of the effect on other people?
Yeah. And that was it. Never said a word to anyone. I just got rid of him.
What state was he in?
He seemed very confident, self-assured. He wasn't a nervous wreck. He said he wasn't going on flying.
Did he give any reason?
No, I think he just said he didn't want to get killed. Something like that. I can't remember. But he just, you know. But he, I didn't have much sympathy with, because he didn't look as if he was a nervous wreck. You know, he didn't appear to have been under a great strain. I don't think he'd been operating very long, as far as I remember. He was certainly only first tour.
So did you shout at him?
No. No good shouting at people. I can't remember what I said. I know I spoke very quietly, and I think I probably said that I held him in contempt, and he must get off the station within 24 hours. Get out of my office. That sort of thing.
But presumably you had to report it to your superiors.
I can't remember how I handled it, frankly. I probably just said unsuitable for operations, or, you know. I don't think I would have said cowardice or refusing to fight, because that would have involved a court-martial automatically. I think I would have said unsuitable for operations, because it's always within the power of the CO to decide that someone wasn't good enough, you know. Standard training wasn't good enough for him.
Now, you said that in the autumn of 1940, you went to the operational training unit under protest, but then in 1941 you went back to operations.
Yeah.
Do you remember when that would have been, which month?
207 Squadron, RF Waddington, 5th of April, 1941.
How did you feel about going back into the front line?
Well, we were very, I don't know, patriotic or whatever the feeling. And remember, we were regular officers. And my view was always that as soon as I felt fit enough, I must go back. Because I was a professional, that's my job. And I didn't particularly want to, but... And I suppose one felt quite honoured to be forming a new squadron, all with, as it were, elite crews, all second tour crews, and with a new aircraft. So it was a great compliment, obviously.
What was
but the driving force was that, you know, the war had to be fought, and one must do it.
What was the new aircraft?
That was the Manchester. Which turned out to be a bit of a disaster because of this Vulture engine. It was a lovely aeroplane to fly.
In what way? In what way was it so lovely?
It was very immediate on the controls. It handled almost like a fighter for a very big aeroplane. And It was a pilot's aeroplane. But the engines, of course, They were originally designed for an output of 2,400 horsepower, I think. And they had, because they kept on breaking up, it was two Merlins stuck onto each other with one main bearing, you know, Merlin on top and Merlin on the bottom. And the main bearing wasn't strong enough to cope with the thing. And so and it was introduced too early before it had been properly developed and all that sort of stuff. And so they used to seize up. And they eventually reduced the horsepower, takeoff horsepower, down to 1,660 horsepower instead of 2,400. And so it was very sluggish getting off the ground. We'd taken off to the west from Waddington, there's RAF Waddington in Lincolnshire. There's a very gentle slope of about 200 or 300 feet. And we'd use all of that once we got over the hedge, put the nose down a little, just to build up a bit of speed, carry on probably for 5 miles till you dare start turning away, climbing. You were then climbing steadily, and if you hadn't got above 10,000 feet by the time you got to the Dutch coast, you were allowed to drop off up to two 1,000-pound bombs of the bomb load to lighten the aircraft so you could get up to some sort of operational height before you hit the Ruhr or whatever you're going for. So it was a struggle.
Did that often happen, that the bombs were jettisoned?
I had to do it quite a few times, yeah. I did hold the record of doing the third most sorties in the Manchester. There were two crews above me. I did 20 operations, that's all on them. And I think most was about 25 or something. But I always reckon is that I'm not an engineer, but the technique of those days was to fly with high boost and low revs, which in theory gives you the maximum range. But it meant the engines were trundling around like as if you're flying along, you know, in top gear at low speed sort of thing, or bottom gear or whatever it is, you know. So I reversed the process and used to fly my aeroplane against orders at high revs and low boost, where it whined a bit, used a bit more fuel, but seemed to be much happier. And that's why I reckon that I survived, you know, much longer than other people. The thing, the engines would have the pressure would be right down on the red mark on the dial, and temperature gauge would be right up on the red at the top. The mine kept on going. They didn't really know exactly why they were losing so many of the Manchesters on operations. They thought it was engines. So they devised a scheme whereby the wireless operator, if you were shot down, or if you, you know, went down, you were allowed to transmit in clear FIT or ENG or FLK, which would be fighters, flak engines, to give them at home an idea of the reason why. So it was, you know, it suffered, that aeroplane, quite a bit. Eventually, we did an operation. We got hold of one typical Manchester, and we flew it round and round the United Kingdom, day and night, with crews changing, you know. So it was never on the ground more than 20 minutes to refuel. And eventually the engine packed up, and it was over at Perranporth in Cornwall, a little fighter. A chap managed to get it into Perranporth, which was a small fighter station in Cornwall.
What was the object of doing that? What was the object of doing that?
Well, to get a situation where the engine actually had packed up, and so the engineers could then examine it and see exactly what had gone wrong with it, you see. So this happens, as I say, at Perranporth, and they came and took the engines out, put new engines in, and I flew it out, I remember, on a very short runway.
Did you feel nervous about flying the aircraft?
Yes, it was a bit demoralizing because it was always giving trouble, and sometimes you get a Bunsen burner effect. The exhaust stubs from the engine would catch fire, and that wasn't a very nice thing to have at night or when you're over enemy territory, because it gives you away a lot. And you expect the whole thing. Well, one was nervous about everything. One was always nervous about fire more than anything else, I think. One of my greatest friends, I reckon, was my service 3.8 revolver. And I used to have it with one, you had to pull, you know, was only one bullet in, cartridge in it. But it was the second chamber, so you had to click it twice. And that was in my flying boots. Because the fear, the thing that gave me the most fear was burning to death, because it's quite, you know, you see a lot of it when you're flying over Germany on operations. A plume of flame as, you know, the aircraft are being shot down, and it's pretty horrific to think that you're... And as captain, you can never leave the aircraft. I never would. Because you never know if your crew are all right. And the chances... It would have to be a very controlled situation in which each, the rear gunner and the upper gunner and the wireless operator and so on, were able to say, OK, skip, I've gone, sort of thing. So I never held the prospect of being able to leave the aircraft if one was being shot down, or even if an engine caught fire and you were, you know, out of control or something. You never know when they've gone.
So the gun was for a massacre.
So the gun was for me, yeah. And that was the greatest friend I've ever had, because he felt that you wouldn't have to face that last bit of the fire. And that did a lot of morale good to me, I think, having that. Anyway.
Where did you operate with from Waddington with 207?
What targets?
What targets, yes.
We're into 41 now, and I've got May the 9th, operations £4,000 to Mannheim. So you weren't carrying a big bomb load because of these wretched engines. 12th, £6,000 to Mannheim. Bombed Cologne, which would have been a secondary target, for, you know, it's probably in cloud or something. Operations were much less frequent than most on that occasion. June the 22nd, Dusseldorf. June the 26th, Kiel. £6,000. 29th, Hamburg. And that all July the 14th, Hanover. July the 24th, Kiel docks. There's a much more detail in the squadron history on this.
Well, no, leave that
you
for a moment.
You don't want it all.
Leave that for a moment. But can I ask you which of these targets, were some of them ones that you dreaded more than others?
Well, any targets in the Ruhr were always more heavily defended. And they would have been the worst ones, I think. I started off with two squadrons as a flight lieutenant. I then became a flight commander, and then I was acting squadron commander. And considering I was hardly 23 at the time, rapid promotion. But I remember when I was squadron commander, I devised a tactic, and I forget, I had a name for it, I've forgotten what it was. There was a searchlight defence of the Ruhr, a long line of dense searchlight batteries. And the instinct is if you see a cone of searchlights with some poor devil in it, over there, and one over there, is to fly in the black in the middle. And I said, never do that. If you see, if there's a cone of searchlights, get as close as you can in on one side of it. Because that means the same battery has now got two targets. You're also probably confusing the aiming system, because there are two targets there. And you have obviously a much greater chance of penetrating. And that did reduce casualties quite a lot. So, in other words, they couldn't bring all their searchlights to bear on us, because we were concentrating on the ones which had found targets.
Do you remember any? Sorry.
Yeah, go on.
Do you remember any narrow escapes that you had on that second tour?
Well, I remember one particularly one. Of course, after all this, I'll think of lots of others. But I mean, I remember there's one particular one. Very, very hard to find targets, and on this particular night. It was the Krupp's munitions place in the room. And they were just as good as us at doing spoof targets and things like that. And I spent a lot of time, there was a great blaze, and I reckon it was a spoof. And I'd spent a lot of time, there was a little bit of moonlight,